This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
This hour. More Palestinians are killed in the Gaza Strip as Israel defies all international calls to stop its months-long deadly onslaught on the territory's civilian population. The Islamic resistance in Iraq carries out a new drone attack on an Israeli military target, pledging to continue its operations until the Israeli genocide in Gaza comes to a halt. And Iran's Prime Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian, who is in Pakistan, says Tehran and Islamabad are determined to step up their joint fight against terrorist groups in their border regions. Well, welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. Israel keeps pounding Gaza, killing more Palestinians in the already devastated territory. 40 people have lost their lives in fresh strikes on Gaza City, as well as in Nusayrat camp located in the center of the Strip. Israel's genocidal war is now in its 115th day. The total death toll has surpassed 26,400. Tens of thousands have also been injured. Apart from casualties, the relentless attacks have inflicted a catalog of miseries on the people of Gaza. According to Euro-Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor, more than 25,000 kids have lost one or both parents in Gaza since October the 7th. Meanwhile, a Palestinian armed faction reports that it shot down an Israeli drone over southern Gaza. The Mujahideen Brigades also said that it bombed an Israeli aviation base in the southern occupied Palestinian territories. Earlier, we spoke to our correspondent in the Gaza Strip, Moti Abu Musaba, about the latest developments there. He said the Israeli regime has intensified its bombing of residential areas, leading to dozens of fatalities.
The last night was hellish and bloody for the Palestinian people in Gaza Strip, not only here in Deir el-Balah city or in the central area of Gaza Strip, but across all areas of Gaza Strip, as the Israeli warplanes maintained their attacks on the Palestinian residential areas. In the central area of Gaza Strip, particularly in the Nusayrat refugee camp, the Israeli warplanes pounded several residential buildings and apartments, claiming the lives of at least 40 Palestinians, civilians, mostly women and children. And when it comes to Gaza City, also it was a harsh night for the Palestinians there, as the Israeli occupation forces renewed their attacks on several residential areas inside Gaza City, where at least 23 Palestinian civilians have been killed, as the Israeli occupation forces attacked a school which was taken shelter by the Palestinian evacuees from the northern of Gaza Strip. And in addition to that, 10 Palestinian civilians also lost their lives after the Israeli occupation forces attacked several residential buildings in Ashat, a refugee camp. And on the ground, as you know, that the Israeli occupation forces is still attempting to invade and to practice more offensive, particularly inside Gaza City. It was reported yesterday or over the last night that the Israeli tanks managed to move forward in the depth of Gaza City and Arimal neighborhood and the surrounding areas of Ashifa Hospital amid fierce gunfight of the Palestinian resistance. And drastic clashes erupted between the Palestinian resistance and the Israeli occupation forces on the ground. It means that the Palestinian resistance is still stand to its ground.
Israeli forces have carried out fresh raids on several areas of the occupied West Bank, killing at least 5 Palestinians. 2 Palestinians were killed in an Israeli incursion into a town south of Al-Khalil. The regime also carried out a separate raid into Jenin, killing another Palestinian. The 4th victim of the Israeli violence was a student who was killed by the regime forces in Bethlehem. Another Palestinian was shot dead during a military raid in Silwad. Israel has carried out raids in the occupied West Bank almost on a daily basis since the regime began its onslaught in the Gaza Strip on October 7. The acts of aggression have left over 370 Palestinians dead. We were earlier joined by our correspondent Mona Kandil, who gave us more details on the Israeli raids into the occupied West Bank. Let's take a listen.
This is what happened last night. Israeli troops had raided first the city of Jenin and some neighborhoods of the refugee camp of Jenin. And they also stormed the Al-Hadaf neighborhood. And at least one Palestinian has been arrested by the Israeli forces. During this military raid, Israeli troops also stormed the village of Al-Yamun. In Al-Yamun, clashes had erupted between Palestinians and Israeli forces. This is what the residents of Al-Yamun have said. And at least one Palestinian has been seriously wounded. Later, this young Palestinian man, 21-year-old Thaer Hammo, succumbed to his injuries. And he was, of course, seriously wounded and transferred to a small clinic there in the Jenin area. And the doctors later said that this young man has succumbed to his injuries. During the military raid, the Jenin Israeli forces have caused severe destruction in the infrastructure. The Israeli forces destroyed also some parts of homes during this military raid. The main destruction was in the infrastructure of the roads, all the streets leading to the refugee camp of Jenin, as well as in the neighborhoods of the Jenin refugee camp.
The Islamic Resistance in Iraq says it has carried out a fresh attack on Israeli targets in occupied Palestinian territories. In a statement, the group said it launched a drone strike on an Israeli military target at dawn on Monday. The Islamic Resistance in Iraq says that it will continue to hit enemy strongholds. There are no words on the possible damage or casualties yet. In a separate incident on Sunday, the U.S. said three of its troops were killed in a drone strike on a military base straddling the border between Jordan and Syria. The U.S. Central Command says at least 25 service members were also injured. The U.S. President Joe Biden has blamed resistance groups in Iraq and Syria for the attack, but there has been no claim of responsibility so far. Meanwhile, Iran has rejected as baseless the accusation that it had a role in the deadly attack on a U.S. base in Jordan, saying this is a plot by parties that have an interest in dragging the U.S. to a new conflict in the region. The foreign ministry spokesman said in his weekly presser that the plot is hatched by those who seek to cover up their failure by provoking the U.S. to expand the current tensions. Nasser Kanani said Tehran does not welcome any escalation in the region. He added that Tehran is not involved in the resistance group's decision-making on how to defend themselves against acts of aggression or support Palestine. Kanani reiterated that an immediate ceasefire in Gaza can pave the way for return to peace in the region. Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement has carried out fresh strikes against Israeli positions. Among the targets, several gatherings of Israeli forces in the northern parts of the occupied Palestinian territories near Lebanon's southern borders. Hezbollah also hit Israel's espionage equipment at the Ras al-Nakura site with precision missiles. The resistance movement fired two Falak 1 missiles at the Kherbet Meir base as well. Hezbollah and the Israeli military have been exchanging fire since the genocidal war in Gaza began. Israeli forces frequently launch attacks on areas in southern Lebanon. In response, Hezbollah targets Israeli troops and military positions across Lebanon's southern border. The movement says it aims to support Palestinian resistance fighters who are battling Israel inside Gaza by engaging the regime forces at another front. The Yemeni army says it has carried out yet another operation against an American vessel in the Red Sea, following a string of similar attacks over the past weeks. The army spokesman Yahya Sari said the Lewis B. Puller Expeditionary Mobile Base ship was targeted by a naval strike missile in the Gulf of Aden. Sari said the vessel provided logistical support to the American forces in their attacks on Yemen. The spokesman said the operation was carried out in response to those strikes and in solidarity with Palestinians. He stressed that operations against vessels owned by or bound for Israel will also continue until Israel stops its onslaught on Gaza. We earlier asked Yemeni activist and political commentator Hossein Abouqaiti to share his thoughts about the recent operations against U.S. vessels. Let's listen to what he had to tell us.
This is actually exactly what Yemeni army has been saying, that the expansion of the attack in the Red Sea, the one who's responsible for it is the president of the UK and United States, and the attack against Yemen. And we remember, since this attack, which United States claim that they are actually to obstruct or to deter Yemeni capability to target ship is actually shows exactly the opposite. Since the strike against Yemen, Yemeni has actually targeted several commercial ships belonging to the United States and UK. And we remember in the last two or three days, they have targeted an oil tanker that is owned by a British company. And the only demand that Yemeni still insist to stop all this attack is to stop the genocide in Palestine, especially in Gaza, to lift the blockade, to allow food and medicine to enter Gaza. And we've seen clearly that the Zionist state of Israel is not stopping, because as long as they are getting financial help, weapons and ammunition and all type of help they need from United States and UK, they will continue their attack, because I believe that Yemeni army actually will extend its attack to target all commercial ships to the UK and to the United States. If they are not going to stop attacking Yemen and stop the genocide in Gaza, this means that the Red Sea will be blocked and none of their ships will actually be able to enter the Red Sea. So they should be the one who will actually will stop the genocide against the Palestinian people.
We told you about how Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement has carried out some fresh strikes against Israeli positions. Let's find out more about those positions. Our correspondent, Mariam Saleh, joins us from Beirut to tell us more. So we have the exchanges that have taken place. Tell us what, in particular, those Israeli positions are, Mariam, if you can.
Well, we've had several positions. We've had Birkat Risha, for example, Mitat, Jalal Alam. Those were three of the significant barracks that were hit. Also, the Nakura seaside post was also targeted by Hezbollah and have targeted directly the espionage devices for the Israelis in Nakura, specifically. And the Israelis have tried to situate and put in new devices after Hezbollah has already targeted the original devices that are used by the Israelis to for reconnaissance purposes and espionage against Lebanon. Of course, the Israelis always have backup, and so Hezbollah has made sure that they will target even the backup. What is new in this chapter of confrontation is that Hezbollah has uncovered the use of the rocket of Falak 1, which is also very significant, in addition to the extensive use of Al Burqan rocket last night after midnight. Two simultaneous operations took place by Hezbollah against two different posts where they used the Burqan rocket as well. We also have continuously on a daily basis complaints from the Israeli settlers saying that what they are hearing is something that is much louder and something that is much more scarier than they've ever witnessed in the past. It's not a normal Katyusha. It's not a normal anti-tank or anti-armor missile. It's something greater than that. This is what those settlers are saying. And so they are living that state of continuous terror as a result of these confrontations. The Israelis have transformed almost all of the Gilili, or at least 7 to 10 kilometers, into a closed military zone. They've cornered off the area. They're not allowing any media or any of the settlers to return to that area. And of course, there's a lot of promises that are being given by the Israeli officials saying that they will bring back the settlers. And they're also using a lot of U.S. Leverage into Lebanon to try to put pressure on the Lebanese government and on Hezbollah, whether through blackmail or through other diplomatic channels and through other means, to force them to stop their operations. Now, since Hezbollah has refused to stop, they're adamant on continuing these resistance operations until the war on Gaza stops. Then there is also other talks about the fact that the Israelis have brought in more enforcements and reinforcements into the Galilee region. They took them out of Gaza, brought them towards the north of occupied Palestine. And so that basically raises the stakes when it comes to a possibility of a wider confrontation. The Israelis are also going to a more ladder of escalation, if we may say, enlarging the scope bit by bit, it seems, going to towns and villages that are further off from the border. In the beginning, it was only all the towns that are all along the border. Now we have more Israeli shelling towards other areas. And we're talking about areas that are maybe 7 kilometers in some instances. It was in places which are some 15 kilometers away from the border. That is, of course, that does raise the alarm. But Hezbollah's officials have said that the Israelis are incapable and not ready, since, first of all, their units that are coming from Gaza are exhausted, they are over-fatigued, in addition to the fact that Hezbollah is more ready than ever before for any sort of face-off the Israelis decide to launch and begin.
Thank you so much for that. Maryam Saleh there from Beirut. We appreciate it, Maryam. Moving on, Tehran and Islamabad are taking further steps to fight against terrorism. That's according to Iran's Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian.
Today, the two high-ranking delegates and delegations of Pakistan and Iran, we agreed together in order to take further actions as soon as possible when it comes to border security, necessity of fighting against terrorism, expansion of trade, commercial and economic cooperation, establishment of the joint border markets, and opening of the border crossing, as well as establishment of the free trade zones.
Amir Abdollahian made the remarks in a joint press conference with his Pakistani counterpart in Islamabad. The top diplomat said that Iran and Pakistan will use joint cooperation to prevent terrorists from endangering the security of the two nations. He noted that Tehran considers Pakistan's security as its own security and the security of the whole region. For his part, Jalil Abbas Jilani said the two countries have agreed to establish a high-level consultation mechanism to fight against terrorism. The top Pakistani diplomat also said that Tehran and Islamabad will also take measures to improve their bilateral economic relations. Moving on, several European capitals have witnessed rallies in solidarity with Palestinians as Israel pushes its genocide in the Gaza Strip. In the Danish capital of Copenhagen, the protesters condemned Israeli atrocities in the besieged Gaza Strip and called for an end to the genocide. Also in Spain, people marched in Madrid to denounce the onslaught on Gaza. The demonstrators voiced support for South Africa's case against Israel at the International Court of Justice. They also carried flags of Palestine and South Africa and chanted pro-Palestinian slogans. Countries across the world have seen mass pro-Palestinian rallies since Israel began its deadly aggression on the Gaza Strip on October 7. And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Economic divide.
The world economy is on the road to a fragile recovery, but the U.S. and its so-called Red Sea Coalition are jeopardizing this by supporting the U.S.-Israeli genocidal war in Gaza. The Yemeni army has warned only Israeli-linked vessels will be targeted in support of Palestinians unless the genocidal war ends. As a result, Red Sea maritime trade has been affected, including impacting the world economy. Let's find out what some of the highlights of this program are concerning that. First, militarizing the Red Sea. The U.S. and the U.K. and this so-called coalition has done that. One of the things they have done, they have attacked Yemen. And as a result, they have jeopardized the Red Sea transit.
We'll be looking closely at that. Now, one of the impacts, obviously, is on the world trade, but how has it impacted that? Well, shipping costs have increased, insurance costs have increased, and supply chains have been affected. And that's not good news. This kind of sounds like COVID-19 and what occurred during that two-year period. Then the impact on cargoes in particular, which obviously, when it comes to the consumers and the prices they feel, as you can see, price increases, inflation, and at the center of it, energy price increases.
Since mid-November 2023, the Yemen-based Ansarullah movement has attacked dozens of commercial ships destined to the occupied territories. The ships were mostly attacked in the Red Sea. Yemeni officials say the attacks are a show of support for the Palestinian people in Gaza. The attacks have practically halted commercial activities in the port of Eilat in the occupied territories. They have also increased global commercial costs. The U.S. and U.K. have militarized the region with their strikes on Yemen. An exodus of shipping companies from the region now threatens to scuttle supply chains and increase consumer prices. More than 150 commercial ships have chosen the longer route since November. The Red Sea is one of the most important arteries in the global shipping system, with one-third of all container traffic flowing through it. Any sustained disruption in trade there could send a ripple effect of higher costs throughout the world economy. This is particularly true of energy. 12% of seaborne oil and 8% of liquefied natural gas, LNG, transits the Suez Canal. Ships shunning the Red Sea will have to instead sail around the Horn of Africa, which can cost $1 million more round trip and additional fuel costs.
Time now to take a look at some of the online posts. First up, a tweet from X: Red Sea crisis could shatter hopes of global economic recovery. Topic of our program. Then we go to a website: Red Sea crisis could shatter hopes of global economic recovery, where the World Bank has warned of surging energy prices, a slower growth, and higher inflation as a threat rises of disruption to world trade. Now, this was dated to Saturday, January 13th of this year, where UK and US airstrikes in Yemen have occurred, and it said the crisis now threatens to feed through into higher interest rates, lower growth, and persistent inflation, also greater geopolitical uncertainty. Next up, GT Graphic has said this: the escalating crisis in the Red Sea, a crucial route for international trade in goods and energy, has exerted impacts on global shipping and the economy. A 30% decline in ship traffic in the Suez Canal since the start of 2024 compared to 2023, and a doubling of the average shipping cost per 40-foot container globally since late November 2023. So Tesla and Volvo Cars have been impacted. Suspension of one of their factories in Europe is one example. And then finally, a website: Red Sea crisis, a risk for the EU economy, energy supplies of the EU, and also their prices. This has come from a trade chief who said Europe and its people can expect to face higher energy costs, delayed shipments, and a return of inflation, resulting in higher and longer-lasting interest rates. Those were some of our online posts. Let me now introduce our guest for the first segment of the Q&A. John Pfeffer joins us. He is the Director of Foreign Policy and Focus at the Institute for Policy Studies. John Pfeffer, welcome to Economic Divide. Taking a look at the way that the Red Sea tensions have erupted, the U.S.-Israeli genocidal war in the Gaza Strip is the source of it. Yemen has come out in solidarity, along with other countries, I must say, but they have taken it a step further with targeting Israeli-bound ships. Now, this has impacted not only the shipping costs, but, for example, you're looking at costs of $1 million more now for round-trip trading routes that the containers have to now travel. Insurance premiums obviously have also increased. So then the question comes about as to whether we're looking at this impacting inflation, because energy prices are also slowly creeping up.
Well, definitely there'll be some influence on inflation. I mean, it's a little difficult at this stage to predict how much of a jump in inflation. We've had a generally a decline in inflation over the last year, and this could arrest that decline or stop that decline. First of all, the impact will probably be less than, say, the war in Ukraine or the pandemic had on global inflation. Those were major drivers of increases in inflation. What will probably influence this particular situation and why inflation rise will not perhaps be as large is that there are alternatives. First of all, they're slightly more costly, but still within the parameters of you know what are considered acceptable costs for global transport. And also because China, it turns out, doesn't need quite as much oil as expected at this particular juncture. So the demand coming out of China is slightly less. So that means that there'll be a slightly less of an impact on global inflation as a result of these additional costs for shipping.
All right, thank you for that. Let me introduce our next guest. Michael Stowell joins us. He's a writer at swans.com. Michael Stowell, welcome to Economic Divide. The way that this U.S.-Israeli genocidal war has continued, we're looking at the fact that the regional spread now is imminent. Many conflicts are breaking out. And, of course, at the heart of it is this U.S.-Israeli genocidal war. But the U.S. and the U.K. took it to the next level by attacking Yemeni army positions. Yemen says, end the onslaught, open up the borders from the Rafah border crossing, let the aid in, and, of course, have this war end, this U.S.-Israeli genocidal war end as soon as possible. And we will not target Israeli-bound vessels. Why doesn't the U.S. want to end the onslaught in order for the world trade not to be sacrificed, which is already impacting it?
Well, we've seen in recent events that whether or not these strikes on vessels in the Red Sea are effective 100% doesn't really make much difference. The Houthis are using primarily fairly advanced drones. The missiles they have are subsonic, so they're pretty easy to shoot down. But these folks are have been at war for quite some time, 10 years or more, and they are very astute in how they use the weapons they have. And they are disrupting that trade route through the Red Sea.
Time now for the Infinews section of the program. We're going to take a look at different news from around the world with an economic flavor as opposed to just focus on the U.S.-Israeli genocidal war economic ramifications. First up, there's a transaction cap that has happened from the EU where this red big brother is watching EU cracks down on cash transactions. It said the bloc is broadening anti-money laundering measures in order to include cryptocurrency. It also includes luxury goods and football with a cap of 10,000 euros. Seems like this figure, 10,000, is what even the U.S. usually looks at, that it doesn't surpass that figure in order for taxes to be applied on online money transfers. Not too sure why that figure is. Then we move on to this particular topic, inequality coming from Oxfam, and of course coincides with the Davos Forum. It said that there is a growing gulf of inequality that's fueled by corporate power. The world's richest five men have more than doubled their fortunes this decade since the year 2020, while nearly 5 billion people have been made poorer. And that's really a sad stat there. At the current rates, the world will see its first trillionaire within a decade, while it will take over two centuries in order to end poverty. Oxfam does a good job to put things into perspective. Since I mentioned the World Economic Forum, here is a topic for you where it talks about AI and inequality. We just mentioned inequality. AI, artificial intelligence, to increase global inequality. Really? Well, it said the technology's benefits for the production will be more pronounced in high-income economies, hence inequality as a result of that, according to a survey that was done by the WEF itself. Next up, let's take a look at this entry that talks about oil prices. It said oil prices are steady despite Mideast tensions. We call it the West Asia region, but risks are rising, and this is while Brent crude has briefly touched the $80 per barrel after the U.S. and U.K. airstrikes on Yemen, and also oil prices to have mostly trended sideways in recent weeks. The point of this being is it's kind of surprised that the oil prices have not really risen a lot higher based on the tensions that are occurring in the West Asia region. Those were the topics for our InfoNews section.
Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
The Red Sea, a vital maritime route when it comes to international trade. Well, given the volume of vessels and containers that travel here, why does the U.S. want to jeopardize this by militarizing this area, knowing that it could suffer the consequences? Let's try to find out why that is the case. Now, when it comes to the Red Sea area itself, it's good to take a look at it, especially when it comes to the relevance of one particular strait. And I want you to turn your attention to that Bab el-Mandab. Now we're going to zoom in into that area in terms of the traffic of the container ships. This gives you a rough idea. So how important of a corridor is, and a narrow one at that. All these containers have to make it through this narrow passageway and make its way up the Red Sea, then to Europe. So it is no surprise then that its stability is related to the common interest of the international community, something that should be understood by the U.S., but it's apparently not the case when it comes to the U.S. Now, in terms of the significance of the Bab el-Mandab and the Red Sea trade route, well, this tiny narrow waterway is the entrance and exit. This is the type of stats that come out of that, 6.2 million barrels per day of oil. Can you believe that? You got about 10% of the global world trade that also is represented here. This means $9.6 trillion in terms of the yearly sales, and then $26 billion in terms of the money that's generated on a daily basis. Let's turn our attention now to the Suez Canal. That's at the top of the Red Sea. In terms of the relevance there, trade-wise, around 30% of the global container traffic, and over, I believe it's 1 million barrels of crude oil per day travels through here. This further displays the importance of the region as a whole and the significance that it has for countries worldwide, especially Europe, because of the tensions in the Red Sea caused by the U.S.-Israeli genocidal war. Well, now the way that this affects the containers for the Suez Canal, negative 30% or a 30% decline since the start of 2024 compared to the previous year because of what's happening, adding to more worries about the short-term consequences. And then the shipping cost, 200%, that's right, per 40-foot container, doubling globally. And with the U.S.-Israeli genocidal war showing no signs of it ending anytime soon, higher shipping costs apparently will remain intact. And here are some of the examples of the types of items that have been impacted by this. The transportation of 47% of toys, around 40% of household appliances also have been impacted, and about 40% of clothing between Asia and Western economies to have been impacted by this. The list doesn't stop there. It also includes raw materials like chemicals and also key components as well. Another example, the shipments of 24% of these chemicals that I mentioned, 22% of flat-rolled steels used in the auto industry, and 22% of what's called auto-insulated wires and batteries also to be impacted. So the reach of the impact is quite wide and steep. All right, hopefully that gives you an idea about the way that the U.S. has militarized the region and its impact. Of course, our guest is more important to figure out from them what they think about this. We have John Pfeffer joining us. He's the director of the Foreign Policy in Focus at the Institute for Foreign Policy Studies. John Pfeffer, welcome back to the program. The U.S. is leading a security initiative that it calls in the form of alliance of sorts, where it's called Guardian in the Red Sea, but not all are on board, like Saudi Arabia and the UAE. And then when it comes to the strikes that the U.S. conducted with the U.K. On the Yemeni army, many disapproved of it because they knew economically they would one way or another be impacted. Is the U.S., do you think, using then its attack to divert attention from the U.S.-Israeli onslaught on the Gaza Strip?
Well, first, I'd say that the UAE and Saudi Arabia are primarily not interested in this initiative because of perception that somehow they would be aiding Israel in this effort, and they definitely do not want to give that impression at this moment, because otherwise Saudi Arabia and the UAE have no problem about targeting Houthi installations. They've done so for years, and they're also very interested in protecting shipping, especially from Houthi attacks. So it really is this Israel factor that determines the Saudi Arabian and UAE participation. The other half of your question really is whether the U.S. is trying to divert attention from Gaza. I do think that the United States is very concerned about the situation on the ground in Gaza, and more so than Israel, interested in containing the situation and reducing that conflict. Not because the United States is, you know, all that interested in supporting Palestinian rights, but more because of the potential spillover effect on U.S. interests in the region. This war in Gaza has a negative impact, not only for U.S. presence in the Middle East, but also U.S. reputation internationally. The fact that the United States is not supporting a ceasefire has really cut into perceptions of the United States as an arbiter or an even-handed participant in these affairs, especially in the global South.
All right. It's interesting, you know, when a guest says there, John Pfeffer, that the United States is not supporting a ceasefire, that's what Yemen is saying. Support the ceasefire, lift the siege, let the aid through, end the U.S.-Israeli genocidal war, and there will be no problems in the Red Sea. Anyways, let's bring in our next guest and find out what he thinks. We have him joining us, and let me find his name here, Michael Stowell, writer at swans.com, rejoins us. Michael Stowell, welcome back. I'd like to continue the question that I asked our previous guest about this coalition that the U.S. has formed in the Red Sea. You got a bunch of countries that supposedly are going to be there to protect these container ships, where the source of the problem has been this U.S.-Israeli genocidal war. A couple countries, Saudi Arabia and the UAE, refrained from joining the coalition. Tell us if you think, which some have said, the reason for the U.S. doing this, which included attacks on Yemen, by the way, with the UK, that it wants to divert attention from the U.S.-Israeli war on the Gaza Strip.
Yes, it is, but it's not working very well, especially in the Arab countries. Even the Saudis, who fought for 10 years in Yemen, are not on board with any of this. Things have changed in the last 4 or 5 years. Even though the Sunnis and the Shiites still have difficulties, when it comes to something like what's happening there in Palestine, they are very quick to unite, and rightfully so. So the U.S., yeah, they're trying to divert attention, but not necessarily for anybody other than the American people. And then again, that comes to that's involving the upcoming election, and the president that we have now, Biden. There are many, many doubts about his competency, and he cannot afford any more serious political problems.
comes to the Suez Canal, 40% of Asia-Europe trade normally goes to the area, including a huge amount of oil and diesel fuel for import-dependent Europe, and all about 30% of global container traffic, and more than 1 million barrels of crude oil per day typically head through the Suez Canal. The cost to ship a standard 40-foot container from China to northern Europe has jumped from $1,500 to around $4,000.
Alors, les répercussions immédiates, elles sont doubles. La première, c'est que vous avez un allongement, tout simplement, des temps de livraison de tout ce qui nous vient de fournisseurs asiatiques vers l'Europe. Donc, il faut savoir qu'en moyenne, il faut compter une dizaine de jours de plus de transit lorsqu'on contourne par l'Afrique plutôt que de passer par le canal de Suez. Donc, ça, c'est le premier.
The delays contributed to a 1.3% decline in world trade in December. Collecting goods stuck on ships rather than being offloaded in ports. Meanwhile, the U.S. has put together a so-called security initiative to protect ships in the Red Sea, but not all are on board, like Saudi Arabia and the UAE. Oil prices are also ticking higher. Brent and U.S. crude gained about 3% on fears of a wider regional war that could disrupt supplies. But such strikes could raise the risk of regional conflict. Every option the West could take, therefore, has serious downsides. Tensions and bad choices abound in the Red Sea, but they are also a harbinger of tougher choices and turbulent waters ahead.
Hello and welcome to the Quick Take section. I'm Matti Apossian. The Ansarullah movement's motive for targeting Israeli-bound vessels is paying off. Countries are realizing that their bottom line will be impacted if this U.S.-Israeli genocidal war doesn't stop. This even includes the shipping industry. Taiwanese shipping giant has said that it would stop accepting Israeli cargo immediately for the safety of cargo, ships and crew. Maersk last month introduced a surcharge on shipments to Israel to help cover rising insurance costs. Consumers ultimately could bear the brunt of higher insurance prices. The Israeli economy obviously has not been immune to the tensions in the Red Sea that it has caused by its genocidal war. Amongst different economic sectors that have been impacted, imports and exports have taken a hit. The Bank of Israel said its forecast for Israeli exports in 2024 was down 1% from its forecast in November. The figure includes services such as tourism, which has taken a huge hit due to the onslaught. Imports are forecast to fall by 4% this year, a 5% drop from its expectations in November. Imports from Asia are likely to be the most heavily affected. China, the largest exporter to Israel, makes up more than 14% of the Israeli imports in 2021. And the port of Eilat has seen an 85% drop in shipping activity. Its chief executive has said workers will have to be laid off due to the drop in port activity. One of the reasons that the U.S. decided to attack Yemen and Yemeni army positions, which turned out to be a miscalculation since the U.S. is now a target of the Yemeni army, is hoping it can stop the economic fallout from reaching the U.S. mainland. Nearly a fifth of freight bound for the U.S. East Coast usually passes through the Red Sea. There have been increased maritime shipping rates from China to North America as well. This will increase U.S. consumer prices. If the U.S. economy is negatively impacted, we can see the U.S. President Biden push Israel to end the onslaught on the Gaza Strip. That's the end of this Quick Take segment.
Nobody has come to the aid of Palestinians, let's be real here, in order for the slaughter to stop, except for the countries in the resistance grouping like Yemen and, of course, Iran. Well, the U.S. and its coalition partners, they are willing for the world economy to be negatively impacted, even if it means that their own economies are going to suffer just to continue this U.S.-Israeli genocidal war. That, in a way, is shooting yourself in the foot, and that is not good for the politicians like the U.S. President Joe Biden supporting this genocidal onslaught, including
any of its allies. That does it for this edition of the program. Thank you so much for tuning in to our program this week. We do appreciate it. For Mikhail Batahwe and the entire team here at Economic Divide, it's goodbye until the next program.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. This is Hossein Latifi and you're listening to a program for humanity from IRIB English Radio. In this program we talk about the notion of human being in the Holy Quran. In the previous episodes we talked about different dimensions of the soul of a human being. We talked about the heart. We talked about different qualities and conditions of the heart. We ended up talking about different functions of the heart. And we started the discussion by talking about the function of deep understanding. That we said there are two verses of the Holy Quran talking about fiqh of the heart. Yafqahuna, they understand, but they have deep understanding by heart, or some people not having deep understanding by heart. The second verse is this: وَمِنْهُمْ مَنْ يَسْتَمِعُ إِلَيْكَ وَجَعَلْنَا عَلَى قُلُوبِهِمْ أَكِنَّةً أَنْ يَفْقَهُونَ. There are people who actually listen to you. There are people from among the pagans, infidels. يَسْتَمِعُونَ إِلَيْكَ. They actually listen to you. وَجَعَلْنَا عَلَى قُلُوبِهِمْ أَكِنَّةً. But we have made stamps. We have made blocking on their hearts so that they don't have deep understanding. And when you hear this, you have a question, why Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala stops people from having deep understanding? We have said this before. This is not something Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala starts without any reason. This is the punishment for these people because of their previous sins. It's like a person failing in the tests so that he does not have the permission to sit on higher classes, higher levels in a university academic setting. No, you have first to pass this class and then you're allowed to sit into higher level. So because of their sins, because of their denial, because of their breaking the covenant with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, then the punishment is that they will not have the privilege, the chance to have deep understanding through their heart. Now, another function of the heart in the same respect, which is understanding and theoretical reception of knowledge, is taqul or aql, reasoning. Reasoning has been attributed to the heart, making sense of things. And the verse is very beautiful. I like it, and I explain why. أَفَلَمْ يَسِيرُوا فِي الْأَرْضِ فَتَكُونَ لَهُمْ قُلُوبٌ يَعْقِلُونَ بِهَا أَوْ آذَانٌ يَسْمَعُونَ بِهَا. Why don't they يَسِيرُوا فِي الْأَرْضِ? Why don't they sit on journeys, start journeys on earth, so that they have heart, يَعْقِلُونَ بِهَا, by which they can contemplate and think. عقل means to contemplate, deep thinking. You may ask, what's the difference between fiqh and aql? They might be very close. Fiqh means deep understanding. Aql means contemplation. It takes a bit more of mental process, I think. Al-aql, ta'aql, ya'qiluna biha. And it depends. Like, for example, the intake, the external intake might be a little bit. But the thing that you add to it, or to contextualize it in order to understand, is more. than fiqh. Fiqh is that your intake, the external intake, are different elements and you have to make sense between them. But aql might have this meaning, that you don't necessarily need to take different elements from the external world. No, just one thing. But that one thing you devour, you understand it, you contemplate over and over in order to take or to discover different dimensions of it properly. So, this verse is beautiful. We should explain it more. We will have a break and come back to explain it more after the break.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. This is Hussein Latifi, and you're listening to a program for humanity from IRIB English Radio. We were supposed to talk about this beautiful verse, أَفَلَمْ يَسِرُوا فِي الْأَرْضِ. Why don't they sit on journeys, start journeys on earth, so that they have hearts they can contemplate with? أَوْ آذَانٌ يَسْمَعُونَ بَهَا. They have ears that they can listen with or through. فَإِنْهَا لَا تَعْمَ الْأَبْصَارِ. No, don't take it wrong. We are not talking about them being blind. فَإِنَّهَا لَا تَعْمَ الْأَبْصَارِ. Their eyes are wide open. Their eyes are not blind. وَلَكِنْ تَعْمَ الْقُلُوبِ. The problem is that their heart is blind. Blindness of the heart is very important in Quran. So it says, don't take me wrong when I talk about their ears being open, their heart being functioning, or their, in another verse we had, يَكُونْ لَهُمْ أَبْصَارٌ أَعْيُنٌ لَا يَبْصَرُونَ بِهَا. The eyes that they don't use, it doesn't mean they close their eyes, the physical eyes. It's because Quran says, I meant the ta'mal qulub, ta'miya, the blindness of the heart is what I mean. Now, the beauty of the verse rests on the fact that just by traveling around the world, you will not become a person with deeper understanding. You have to have, in addition to the external intake, you have to have proper analysis of it. You have to have an eye for those details, particular things, those things that matters. I may have seen people who have traveled around the world, but they have not seen things that were very clearly in front of their eyes. They did not understand the situation, the cultural context, or they did not have analysis of that. When they come back from a trip, a travel, a journey, you realize how superficial their journey was. You could actually have those experiences back home. You didn't need to travel. So what is the reason that you take it on yourself to travel and set on journeys on earth? Quran says, if you don't take this out of the journey, the things that open up your heart to ta'aqqul, contemplation. It shows that it was just an entertainment. It did not add to your personal development. It did not add to your growth. It was just an entertainment that you had, and maybe you could have better than that back home. So that is when we talk about tourism, when we talk about a person being a global, like cosmopolitan, whatever they say nowadays, it's not a matter of how much physically you can move your body from here, this corner of the world, to other corner of the world. It is actually more about how much you can take from those elements, external elements, and then you make sense of them, you understand them, you have an eye to see them. A phenomenon is in front of me and you, I don't see it, but you see it differently, completely. So the verse talks about that this is a function of the heart. فَتَكُونُ لَهُمْ قُلُوبٌ يَعْقِلُونَ بِهَا. After these trips, after these experiences, now they have taken lesson, عِبْرَة. They have taken lesson. For example, they have seen the ruins of previous civilizations. They have seen ruins of previous powers. And they take a lesson that this is also possible to happen for us if this is just a transient world, and we should take care about what remains for us for eternity. This is only one lesson, and there are other lessons as well. Thank you very much for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Allahumma salli wa sallim ala rasuli wa ali nabiyil azim. Allahumma salli wa sallim ala rasuli wa ali nabiyil azim. Allahumma salli wa sallim ala rasuli wa ali nabiyil azim. Allahumma salli wa sallim ala rasuli wa ali nabiyil azim.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is